hello and welcome once again to Inside Jobs, the regular podcast where we meet creative leaders and try and find out what makes them tick. Brought to you by IHAF, the leading professional association for in-house agencies, and EKCS, the content production provider that lets creatives focus on what they do best by handling multiple adaptations and production of marketing assets 24/7. Now, this week's guest is, I hope you don't mind me saying this, John, kind of an old school agency creative who in the early 20-teens made the career leap from traditional agencies to in-house agencies. Is that about right, John?
That sounds fair. Thank you for labeling me that. I appreciate that.
Okay, I'm not sure how nuanced that is. But I'm looking forward to hearing from you, John, about the differences between working in traditional agency and in-house agencies. But well, first of all, welcome to Inside Jobs. Can you just start by telling us a little bit, telling us what your role is and a little bit about what you do currently, and then we're going to dig into the hinterland of John Gordon.
Yeah, I'm currently the VP of Creative Services at Fat Brands, so I oversee our creative in-house agency. We support 17 brands, so, you know, as pretty much everything you can imagine, from in-store experiences and graphics to website, to digital, to social. We pretty much handle it all, so to support all of our restaurant brands.
Wow. And I think it's quite a recent company, Fat Brands. So how quickly are these new sub-brands sort of piling in and for you to deal with?
That's a great question. I mean, honestly, in the year that I've been there, we've acquired a couple more brands, including the acquisition of the company that I was working with previously. And we had five brands. So we've had, since our acquisition of GFG, where I was, an additional two brands, seven brands have been acquired in the last year. So we're in a constant growth mode, which is great because we get to meet new people and see new brands and kind of learn more about the history of the brands that we're acquiring. So it's been really, enlightening and learning of all the different, restaurant brands that are out there. And we're just a small piece of a larger puzzle of restaurant brands in the industry. But the ones that we have are really cool and fun to work with.
So we've got brand. Well, can you name some of the brands that you've got that people might recognize?
Yeah, and it's really, some of them are somewhat regional, and some are more, international. But, Roundtable Pizza, Fatburger, Johnny Rockets. I'm trying to think of ones that most people probably would know. Fazoli's, Twin Peaks, Buffalo's Cafe, Great American Cookies, Hurricane Grill and Wings, Elevation Burger, Hot Dog on a Stick, Native Grill and Wings, Marble Slab Creamery. I think I got them. Yeah. So we've, 17 brands in total.
So given all that, you did your degree, I think, in marketing. Is that right?
Yes. I went to Virginia Tech.
Why did you choose marketing then? I mean, I always find that quite interesting when you go from being a child to an adult and you go through, college or university, and people choose things like marketing, which seem sort of very abstracted from your real world existence growing up. So what took you that direction?
That's a great question, because I don't know if I have the perfect answer for it, but I do know that I was always interested in advertising, and I knew advertising fell within the marketing group. And so marketing seemed the best direction, or the best, area to study in. So I chose to go to Virginia Tech, and I was in the School of Business there for 4 years.
Right. So you did start your career, and you spent the next 10 years working for agencies, right? Including JWT.
Yeah, exactly. So, kind of started with a small agency, just kind of did a little bit of everything, and then at JWT for about 5 years. And, that's when I was really kind of got thrown into the fire and learned how to survive and function within a, creative department within a, an ad agency. I loved it. I enjoyed working with, my favorite part was the collaboration and the team, the creative side, the creative department there. I did feel a little isolated on an island. The majority of the meetings were run by the account team and, business development or business strategy. And, it always felt a little bit kind of, at the bottom of the hill. It's like, here's the need. Creative team, do your thing, and we'll go present it to your, the creative director would, present it to.
And so what were you itching for that you weren't getting at that point?
I do think there was my drive was really around being creative and doing cool things and building out my portfolio. And I just didn't have a good, well-rounded vision of what in my role within the whole process of creativity and marketing.
But it sounds like you were also aware of that lack. It wasn't that you were blissfully ignorant. You were kind of looking over the edge and seeing there was other stuff there, but you were kind of unable to get to it. Would that be fair?
Yeah, it took time to get there. I mean, the beginning, I think so. I think maybe I'm kind of revisiting it in retrospect now that I have a larger, kind of understanding of how business and marketing and creativity work together. But at the time, I did feel I enjoyed, I definitely enjoyed working within the creative group and creative, with the other art directors and designers and creative directors and, everybody that was part of the team from, traffic managers and so on. But it did feel a little isolated at times. It felt like, you guys do your thing. Your role is important and valuable to, how we as an ad agency work and function and what we deliver. But, I think about, maybe 2 or 3 years into it, I felt there's more out there. And
I'm interested in this because I've know lots of reasons why people have made the change from traditional agencies where they're working with multiple clients and you can have a short attention span and get on with lots of multiple projects sometimes at the same time. And the advantages with going to in-house agencies, and they're well documented, and there are some perceived difficulties there too, but I've never actually heard this one before. Do you think that people who work creative specifically who work in some of these larger agencies, this is a common feeling amongst them, that they are somewhat isolated from outcomes and causes and, what goes on. But they're sort of trying to look at the world, but it's like a frosted glass window that they're trying to look through, and they really just have to turn in on themselves and kind of do their job rather than understand the wider context.
I can't speak for them, but I think, again, maybe I'm kind of revisiting history a little bit more through a new lens because of where I am today. I'm going to assume they are. I think in where we are in kind of just, as a creative or any role, I think if you can broaden your skill sets that aren't just in a very specific component of the larger, business workflow, I think it makes you more well-rounded. And I would hope, that's something when I'm recruiting here at FatBrands or other places I've been, that's something that I talk about, because I do think it's important when it's almost like an enlightening moment to anybody that's jumping into a role, like, oh, wait, now not just doing this particular, I'm not just going to be a copywriter and write copy, but now I have a better understanding and I have relationships with the marketing leads that you wouldn't typically have in, an agency, a traditional agency client setup, and building strong relationships with, the CEO or the president of the brand. So, you just don't have that opportunity in a creative department sometimes. And I think it's a little bit what people don't know. And when they do know, it becomes, from my standpoint, it's a real good sales or selling recruiting tactic, especially because it's very honest to how it actually works within in-house environment. We do have the luxury, and you get spoiled that you build these strong relationships professionally and personally with the marketing teams and operations and supply chain and kind of like the full scope of people that work within the business. And I don't think a creative in an ad agency typically thinks about that. But when you kind of realize that there is an opportunity there, it does kind of, open your eyes a little bit more. So
sure. No, I find it interesting. So the interface between you working as a sort of external agency art director and you working with an in-house agency happened around 2012. How did that come about?
Yeah, so I left JWT, and I guess it's Wunderman Thompson now, and I found out about working at a company called Focus Brands, and one of the brands that they were hiring for was a creative director for Moe's Southwest Grill, similar to Chipotle. And I was, I did at the time, kind of with probably a lot of people, in-house, is now the time? Is this happening? And
did you know anyone who was working at in-house at the time?
Not really, but it was starting to become trending, with big companies. I think Facebook at the time and some other companies were really getting into it. So, I kind of felt like, okay, this could be an opportunity. But really the turning point was when I went to interview and find out who was there, and people with agency backgrounds and, young creatives that were very super talented. And, I was like, oh my goodness, this is like, another whole world that exists over here. And, the quality of the work and just the people that we are working with were awesome. And it was just, okay, this is a good spot to be in. And then, during my interview, I met with the president of Moe's Southwest Grill, who, is a friend to this day. Some of those opportunities to meet people that you typically wouldn't meet was really interesting, and just learning more about marketing and like I said earlier, about the various aspects of the business, supply chain operations, culinary, and just really working together. It seemed at the time, and it even today, the right place to be.
Well, I want to hear more about that. So you started in 2012, and you had quite a career there. What did you find when you got there in terms of an in-house agency, and how was it when you left? Because you ended up as an SVP there.
Yeah. So it was a great journey. I started out as creative director, and then through time and some changes happening within the company and restructuring the
whole world. What was there when you got there in terms of an in-house agency? I mean, was it small? Was it nascent? Or was it already established and churning out lots of work? Or
yeah, it was definitely small. I mean, it was definitely a small group, and I don't remember the numbers. Maybe 10 or 11 creatives working specifically to the brand, to each individual brands. And, at the time, I think we had five or six brands that we were supporting. So it was definitely small. It was very focused mostly on in-store graphics, in-store experience, kind of point of purchase and things that you would.
And were you doing anything strategic, or were you literally kind of order taking from marketing and, hey, we need some of these for these stores and it needs to say this and be on brand?
Yeah, I mean, it was collaborative, and I think that was a big difference. There was definitely needs coming in. The marketing folks definitely drove the marketing calendar. But it wasn't a directive on here, do this, do that. It was, hey, let's get together and talk about the strategy. Let's talk about it, understand the objective here. Let's figure out what are the best methods to kind of, communicate with the consumer in different touch points. And I've never ever, I mean, since day one, ever felt very, felt like here is the directive. Come back next week with your solutions. It's always felt very collaborative. And I think that is a key differentiator. I think I had a great experience at the agency, but a key differentiator is it feels more collaborative across all the departments, and it's specifically to marketing and creative.
Well, I think it's something that a lot of in-house agency leaders strive for. Not every one of them get it, frankly, and get the opportunity. I mean, to what do you attribute that level of collaboration, where you sit? You do hear so often that in-house agency teams essentially marketing go one way, they go to external agencies to kind of do all the smart, funky, fun stuff, and then they come back and dump a load of assets on the in-house agency and say, hey, churn some of these out.
I've never felt that way. I think there has been a level of trust, and going back to relationships, I think that's been the biggest and most important part, where you do establish a strong relationship with everybody across all departments. And, when you start to prove yourself, I mean, again, with everything, you have to prove that you can do the work and high quality. And I think, just having that level of trust and collaboration and, just really understanding kind of the goals of the marketing team and aligning with them. Ultimately, when you do have that kind of connection and collaboration, they do trust the work that they come out that you're going to be working or creating is going to help drive the whatever that objective is, if it's sales or traffic or engagement.
But how do you determine the level of how should we put this? I mean, when you're going into this and you're starting to work with these teams, these marketing folks, you say as long as you're turning in good work and you're making a contribution there, but how do you know at what level that they want you to turn in the work? Because I presume you are working alongside external agencies of record and so on at the same time.
It's really dependent. I had focus at the time. It was all in house. There was no competition in the beginning. There was no competition between any external agencies. So we brought it in-house, and the reasons behind it, I think one is we were doing great work. And I think from a business standpoint, obviously there are some cost efficiencies of having a team internally. So there was benefits on both sides, but ultimately it came down to, really doing great, good quality work and seeing the results. So in the beginning there, I mean, this is in 2012, the work that we were doing alongside all the other initiatives from all the other, from not just the creative department, our sales were really high. And so everything was really, really good at that time. And so, like I said earlier, just, we were doing great work, providing great solutions, and we weren't competing with anybody. And just, the marketing teams really enjoyed the collaboration working with us. And I think ultimately, it was a great relationship, and the results kind of spoke for themselves.
Did you have senior mentors or sponsors that kind of made sure that, because you were relatively young back then as well, but you were creative director of the whole brand. How did you have someone who was making sure there was space for you to be listened to and for you to know that there was an opportunity to talk and have an opinion?
Oh, it was the marketing teams. I mean, it was our marketing directors and VP of marketing and presidents. And I think it's really important. For me, it's always been a priority is to really build strong relationships with everybody and do it from an honest standpoint, you know, not just for trying to get things through. It's really building having a great relationship where I can go over to and knock on the door of the VP of marketing and ask them a question or push back on some kind of feedback or whatever it may be. It really is, and that's not, you know, that takes time to grow those relationships. But, you know, when you get to a point where you have that, it really is an open and honest conversation between anybody and everybody within the creative and marketing team specifically. And so, yeah, they were an advocate for us if there was any, you know, any tension or anything of that nature. You know, having an advocate such as the VP of marketing or the president, you know, it's invaluable to have that. So it was always, it was really just kind of a strong, connected group. And that was really a big, learning for me too, to know that, you know, there is going to be times of tension and there's going to be times of, you know, where things are great, you know, for the most part, you kind of fall a little bit in the middle. But if there ever is any of those, you know, things that, you know, conflicts that happen, if you're able to kind of talk it out and ultimately kind of come to a compromise or a strong result, it just helps build, you know, I think it just continues to build, you know, a strong foundation for a healthy business.
Interesting. So in what you're doing there with these relationships, it sounds to me like you are enabling your creative team to actually focus on being creative while you're handling perhaps some of the more, I wouldn't say politics, but the sort of business angle of things, the interaction with your colleagues around the business, around the company. Would that be fair that you're trying to kind of give them the creative team space while you deal with, you know, any headwinds that may be there or, you know, opportunities that may be there as well?
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, I think that's the one thing that's, you know, that I take very important to my role is to protect my team and the team. And, you know, the team is, you know, everybody, there's a lot of different personalities and different, you know, styles of interacting and, you know, everybody's unique and it's great. And for me, my role is really to support them, you know, and having conversations. And again, this is collaborative across the board. So it's not just me having conversations with marketing, you know, the same, my team is having them with us as well. But if anything bubbles up that has to be handled or, you know, conversations that are, you know, that should be, you know, private between the marketing and myself, you know, that is a huge part of my role. And it has been for, you know, for the last, you know, probably 7 or 8 years as I grew within Focus. And I make that.
And that includes lobbying for the team and looking for opportunities and saying, "Hey, well, we've got people who can do this. You don't need to not do it or find someone else to do it." There's a bit of that as well, kind of selling the services, as it were.
100%, and that's a big part. I mean, if there's ever any conversations around, "Hey, can we?" And this doesn't happen very often, but hey, could we look at doing this externally? You know, I've always been, you know, let me talk to my team first. Hey, can we do this with your bandwidth, with your skill set, with all of our capabilities? If not, you know, if they say yes, then I will go to bat for them and advocate and then have a real good conversation with, you know, whoever's requesting that particular deliverable. And then ultimately, you know, typically they'll support that. And we, like I said in the past earlier, if we prove ourselves with the quality of the work, it just continues on. But if it is something where my team says, "Hey, listen, we just don't have the bandwidth," or, you know, "Hey, can we bring in a freelancer, or can we, you know, use somebody externally?" You know, I'll go back to them as well. So it really is dependent on the situation. But ultimately, it is comes back to a conversation with my team, and then a conversation with the stakeholder.
So have you ever been in a situation where you inadvertently overpromised and went full steam ahead on something that actually kind of unraveled and your team wasn't able to do? And if so, how did you deal with that if that happened?
That's a good question. You know, I think ultimately we try to do our best, and sometimes you miss the mark. And either you scramble to make it better, or you scrap it, or you go somewhere else. And, you know, I don't know if I have a specific example of when that happens. But, you know, that's not very common for the most part. I think the majority of them would be around kind of more high level video production. You know, if you're going out there with your small team, and I had a team called the Content Kitchen, was, you know, content creators and a video production, a director of video production, as well as a photographer. And we would go out and try to shoot, you know, kind of big budget spots, you know, relatively in a, with an affordable budget. You know, and not every time we got it right. So, you know, we either kind of figured it out or, you know, and I don't know if I even recall a time that we just scrapped it completely and used somebody else, but it was a learning to understand our capabilities. And sometimes if you overpromise, if you're going to do a major shoot that requires a lot of, you know, post-production and, hey, well, you know, clearly we're going to have to use, you know, a post-production facility to help out with that. And we always would. So those were things, that limitations that we knew internally that we can do the video, the pre-production and the production of it, but post-production would clearly have to be outsourced. We would do that. But sometimes we would say, hey, maybe we bit off more than we can chew around the production side, you know, if we're, you know, one thing. I mean, we were having crazy ideas. We were dropping, you know, microwaves out of helicopters and, you know, doing skydiving events. I mean, there's things that we pulled off. You know, frankly, if I look back on it today, it was like, man, how did we do that? I'm sure there were times where we weren't happy with the result. And it was a limitation of maybe our capabilities. Right?
You know, well, you have to keep the credibility with your colleagues. And it's all about the recovery as well, because very often you can't hide these things. So it's all about the graceful recovery and the mea culpa, hand on heart. Yeah, this happened, but this is what we're doing now. And this is our way out.
Exactly. And I think what's the kind of the takeaway for me was, you know, bringing the marketing teams on for the journey. You know, it wasn't, you know, the creative brief didn't.
That doesn't mean to say implicating them in what could be a potential disaster. You're not saying that, are you?
Yeah, no, not at all. But, you know, if they're there and they're seeing the work that's being put in and they're part of the process and they're there on set and seeing, you know, some of the, you know, the obstacles that we have to cross or some of the things that went really well, or, you know, why did we, you know, end up choosing this particular take during the edit because of, you know, whatever, the microphone didn't work, whatever that may be, all those variables that happened that we had to do that. So if they're there on the journey with you, they feel like they're part of the creative process. And I think that's a key takeaway that I've always had, is that, you know, you never want to come back to the marketing team with just executions. So, you know, definitely get them on the ride the whole time so you can get their input. And so they feel like they're, you know, ultimately the creative, the execution is part of, you know, their creativity as well. So it's really important to have that kind of perspective going on throughout the whole creative process.
And do you regard them as your customers or as your coworkers?
You know, that's a gray area, because I know, you know, we can look at him as a client or we can look at him as a coworker, and it's a little bit of both. You know, ultimately we do service and support the marketing teams. So yes, I think you could say they're our client, but, you know, just with the in-house agency relationship that we have, they are more than just clients. They are coworkers. They, for the most part, are friends. So there's definitely a gray area there. But I always remind our team, like, we are there to help support the marketing initiatives. And, you know, so however you want to label them, it's, you know, totally up, you know, it's arbitrary. But ultimately, we're there to help them out and support them through our creativity.
Right. So you finished at Focus, I said, as a senior vice president a couple of years ago with about 40 people, but covering a lot of work. My goodness.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So we had about almost 40 people, and I was working across all of our brands at the time. And, you know, there was even supporting corporate and global channels and franchise sales. So it was, you know, a lot of lines of business. Yeah, it was a lot of work. I mean, you know, even with 40 people, and today I have 17 people with more brands, you know, it's always a challenge. And I'm sure everybody that's been on the calls similar to this with you or the podcast, you know, the bandwidth is always the volume of work is always a little bit of a challenge, you know, and you try to figure out the right ways. And there's probably many different ways to approach it to be able to handle that volume of work. And so, yeah, I mean, we had 40 people and, you know, very kind of typical, you know, creative teams from creative directors that were, you know, one creative director would have overseen two brands, and then have a team of a writer and an art director, a designer, and a production. We had a whole production team, a production team that helped, you know, kind of a studio environment that would help, you know, work within those particular needs, and then the content kitchen, which I mentioned earlier. And, you know, I think in hindsight, we could have used maybe more internal media buying or internal, you know, creative strategist or creative operations manager that we didn't have. We had a traffic manager and we had print production managers that are taking all the creative and actually, you know, getting it over to the print production facilities and, you know, printing and packing and shipping out to all the different locations in the franchise or the franchise location. So, you know, it was a pretty well-oiled machine, but, you know, there's still the bandwidth and the volume of jobs was always a struggle. And it always, yeah. I don't know if anybody has the magic pill to handle that or to not have that be, you know, kind of one of the biggest challenges in an in-house environment. But, you know, we did our best to do as much as possible within a reasonable amount of time.
Well, I've got to say that's why our clients come to us. There's a little plug for me there. So that's what we do. We help them focus on the creative and take all that production off their hands. But anyway, that's another story. So I'm very curious then. You'd risen to the dizzy heights of SVP, Focus Brands, well-established company. And then 2 years ago, you made a change. Tell us about why that happened and what you thought you were coming to.
Yeah, it was right around COVID. I mean, literally around COVID. And there was a lot of changes happening with Focus Brands. And they, you know, obviously made some very big decisions internally. And the biggest one that affected for my team was, you know, kind of breaking apart the creative department or the in-house agency as we had it. And so, you know, a very significant amount of people, you know, were let go and moved on to, you know, to find new roles. And the people that were remaining were aligned specifically to the brand. So it was a big disruption to, you know, something that took a long time to build out and a lot of support that we had building out. But, you know, COVID was one of those things that you just couldn't predict, obviously. And, you know, the changes that were made affected a lot of people at all different levels. And so, you know, I was, you know, from that point I had, you know, it was, you know, where's my next move going to be? And so that was the situation I was in. And then, you know, I mentioned earlier about Mo Southwest Grill, the president of the company then recruited me to hit the company he was working with. He was the CEO of GFG, which is Global Franchise Group. And at the time we had five brands, Hot Dog on a Stick, which is on the West Coast, and Round Table Pizza, Marble Slab Creamery, Great American Cookies, and Pretzel Maker. So he brought me in to kind of do what I did, you know, when I started back with him at Mo South Grill to start building out the creative department. So, you know, at the time there was two creatives. So I went from 37 to two, you know, pretty much overnight. And just really started to build out the team there. And I started with, recruiting somebody that I worked with at Focus as a content creator. I thought that was a real, you know, important need that we, you know, had to bring in. So started to build out, you know,
had a clean slate, really.
Very much so. I was very fortunate that the team.
That's so exciting. So yeah, keep going. And then I'm going to ask you what you did differently when you had a clean slate versus what you inherited and had to adapt with.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. So fortunately, the two people that were there, a designer and a creative director, are amazing and awesome and talented. And, you know, they were doing what they were supporting the brand, just the two of them. And, you know, we were using an agency for one of the brands to handle the majority of the work. So yeah, it was interesting because coming into that situation, there was somewhat of a clean slate. I mean, it wasn't a blank check, start building, you know, rebuild tomorrow. Unfortunately, it was, you know, how can you incrementally grow and scale the team accordingly within reason, within, you know, dealing.
And the outlets were open at the time during COVID, even though it was COVID, or were they shut? I mean, what was the?
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but yeah, exactly. COVID was happening. And so it wasn't, you know, there was, you know, I guess depending on the brand and how they're approaching it, some, you know, for Round Table Pizza, the buffets were shut down, or there was more online ordering. And that really, you know, put the emphasis on online ordering and curbside delivery and third party delivery with DoorDash and you know, all those third party deliveries. So the focus was on that. The in-store, not so much. But, you know, as we got towards, you know, the beginning or towards the end of COVID, and relatively speaking, that everything started to turn back on. So, you know, you had to support the franchisees even more. You had to really build out a great in-store experience. So it became more well-rounded or more 360.
But were you able to be strategic and think in advance and actually start planning out so that when things opened up, you were ready for it? Or was there just so much change and unpredictability going on, you kind of had to be pretty reactive?
You know, at the time there was, you know, there was some, momentum shifts. You know, COVID was going away, and then COVID came back. So you had to be some as much as proactive as we could be. You had to be reactive at the times. So, you know, I think we started to shut down again, and so some of the in-store creative that might have sat in a box in the back of the house that was supposed to be put up. So we had to, we tried to be as proactive as possible. But you know, honestly, we're probably reacting to kind of the news of the day. So it was definitely a challenging environment. And I think, we did a pretty good job of kind of, continuing to communicate as much as possible. And I think a lot of our communication, emails came back, emails became a thing again, and they were, kind of went dormant for a while. So we put a lot of more emphasis on email and social and really kind of engaging with the community as much as we possibly could, with that versus, them coming into and having an in-store experience. So it was definitely, we were not the only ones, but it was definitely a challenging environment.
Wow, you had to think quickly. So where are you now? You started as the three amigos. What have we got now? How many amigos are there now?
Now we're the 17 amigos and amigas. Yeah, so, during Fat Brands acquired GFG, and then I was brought over. And fortunately, I was able to stay as a VP of VP of Creative Services for Fat Brands.
Don't get ahead of yourself, though.
Yeah, John, VP of Marketing. So I was... it kept my title and came over to Fat Brands. And what was pretty, this was amazing because Fat Brands, it was already kind of set up for success. And the department that I came into was already built out, which was great. So we had, designers and a copywriter and, a project manager. There was, all these roles that I would have, had to hire for was already established. Yeah. And so it was, for now it's really kind of integrating, and we've been doing this, I look at it as more of a dimmer switch, and it's not going to happen overnight, but we've integrated with the larger team. And then, through time, we're doing this now is, giving the opportunity for all the creatives to work across all the brands. So not being very brand specific. So a lot of people on our team now have a lot of historical knowledge and understand the brands really well, and all the nuances of all the individual restaurant brands. Within their the brands that they mostly work on. But what I want to do, and the plan is, and we're starting to do this already, is give the opportunity for the designer who's only worked on Great American Cookies and Marble Slab Creamery to have the opportunity to work on Fatburger and Johnny Rockets, and really giving them an opportunity to work across all brands. And that takes time. It takes learning and understanding the brands, their brand voice and the brand's aesthetics and look and feel and the store design and understanding the consumer. So all the different things that they need to learn, like I said, doesn't happen overnight. So absorbing that information from other people on the team and learning that through talking to the marketing teams as well, they're given the opportunity to kind of be well rounded and across all of our brands within our system.
Well, I'm going to assume since this all happened kind of during the COVID time and also acquisition, and I know your headquarters is in California and you're in Georgia, I presume your team is spread out across the United States.
We are spread out across the world, matter of fact. We are, it's pretty awesome. And this is the cool part of, working with Fat Brands is there is a headquarters in Los Angeles, which is fantastic, and get to go there every so often. And a handful of the team is located in the LA area. I have somebody in Hawaii. I have somebody in Brazil. I have some a few of us in here in Atlanta and in Michigan, and we have somebody in Albania, somebody in the UK. I mean, we are truly a global creative department. And what's really cool is even when I was hiring for graphic designers recently, having that opportunity to, try to not just look for somebody local and, really kind of open it up to the world to say who's the right person with the right, design sensibility and aesthetics that would work with our brands. And being able to hire somebody in Brazil or Albania is something that you wouldn't typically have in the past. And it, even at Focus Brands, we were all physically in the office. And I was limited into my hiring opportunities to keep it within Atlanta or, relatively in a close area. But here at Fat Brands, we're just looking for the right people for the role, and it's opened up to the world.
But you were talking about developing the team and giving people experience across brands and so on. Is that not necessarily made more slow by having such a, you know, dispersed team without being able to all kind of get into the office and have a huddle and a meeting and then kind of, you know, still talk in the corridor and catch up and all the things that we miss from office work? Does that not slow you down in the way you want to develop your team? Or does it perhaps give you time more to think about what you're doing and be more intentional?
It's definitely a challenge. I mean, realistically, you know, those conversations you have or looking over somebody's shoulder as they're doing the work, or, you know, now you have to put a little, you have to be proactive, put a little effort, you know, set up a meeting, have a Zoom, you know, those kind of things. It's just the reality of the situation. Slowly, you know, I think through time, and, you know, it does take time to learn and understand the brand. So, it's not going to be something that I'm expecting, you know, somebody that's been working on Great American Cookies for the last 2 years to understand how to work on five other brands, you know, by tomorrow. So I think through time and opportunities of, you know, doing the work, asking the right questions, knowing who to reach out to if you don't have an answer, everybody will get up to speed. But the beauty is there are people on the team that are deeply rooted into some of the brands. So the majority of the questions that anybody would have, somebody has the answer to.
Well, I'm a great believer. And if you work for an in-house agency and you take your paycheck from the brand itself, then you speak of the, you are the brand, and you can speak of the brand. So those people who work on those are obviously brilliant people to go to when you and can mentor the others, I guess, as you move them around the brand.
That's exactly right. And I try to approach our team very collaboratively. I mean, there is a, you know, just because people do have such knowledge, and in order to get that knowledge spread, that you have to, you know, you have to talk to the, you know, you have to learn from the people that understand the brand, the brands and the nuances and all the little details. And, you know, what are some of the choices that have been made in the past that aren't working? What are the choices that can be made in the future that will work? And, you know, I think because we are such a small team, you know, and everybody is, you know, accessible, and it's through, you know, through reaching out through Slack or through Zoom, you just have to put in the effort. And like I said, through time, you know, I feel pretty confident that the team that we have in place today will be able to work on any project for any brand at any time. And that just, you know, it's going to take time.
Fantastic. And it helps them get that diversity of work is also very much more stimulating for them as well, right?
Oh, 100%. I think, you know, and, you know, I was, you know, back in the day when I was just on Most Southwest Grill, I lived and breathed that brand for a year or two. And I loved it, but, you know, the marketing calendar is just, it's constant. It's going to flip over, and you're going to do it again. And you're this day that's the special free queso day, as an example, it's going to be back again. How are you going to do it differently? So I think, you know, when you repeat the marketing calendar over and over again, at a certain point, you want to have fresh thinking. And, you know, when other people have the opportunity to work on those specific jobs or bring another insight into it or a different layout or a different concept, it just kind of, you know, makes the deliverable, the creative, so much better. And from the creative team themselves, like you said, having well-rounded. So, you know, if you're building up your book, your portfolio, and you're only one brand, or you're now 17 brands, I mean, wow, what a great range, especially, you know, for to be able to, you know, talk to, you know, how you understand the differences between brands. So you're not, you know, things aren't just starting to become overlapping each other.
So, John, I'm taking away from this that it's relationships seem to be the number one thing for you in terms of the way you interact with your you know, the brand at large, the marketers in particular, and constantly proving yourself so that you can build those relationships, the trust in those relationships all the time, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, that's important to me, but I think it has to come from an honest perspective. It can't be building a relationship just so you can get your way.
An in-house agency doesn't have anywhere to hide, John. That's the thing.
Exactly. There is nowhere to hide.
If there was a disaster, I can tell you the whole C-suite are going to know about it. So you know, that helps when you're selling the services, which was the other thing you talked about. You know, being able to lobby on behalf of the creative team, make sure they're noticed, make sure that they're getting a shot at the things that they can do really, really well. And you can't do that unless you've got the relationships in the first place.
I think what's really important too, it comes from me. Obviously, it's important for me to have those relationships, but it's really important for everybody on the team to also have those connections and relationships. So if they need to ask a question, get more insight, or even push back, you know, that relationship is already built. So it's coming from an honest place of just being inquisitive or need to know more information. And I think when you have that connection with the marketing person, you know, they're definitely willing and excited to be able to provide more insight for you.
Right, right. Absolutely. So, John, I cannot thank you enough for sharing your journey with Inside Jobs. It's been great listening to it. We could have covered an awful lot more ground, though, John, don't you think?
Definitely. I appreciate it. This has been really fun. It's hard to revisit 48 years and 30 minutes, but I appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Well, we didn't dig into your early childhood, so I think 48 years is really stretching it a bit, but okay. I want to thank Emily Foster of IHAF and my producer, Amy McNamara. Thank you so much for helping put this podcast, making it happen and making it a real thing. IHAF are fantastic partners of ours, and that you have my undying gratitude. Also, I want to thank the team at EKCS for handling the podcast editing and all the inside jobs, promotion and so on. Doing a great job. And finally, to our listener, thank you once again for listening.